With the crisis in Gaza right now, we're hearing many different voices. One voice I wanted to hear was from Palestinian Canadians. So in this episode, I share an interview I had with Ihab Mustafa, a Palestinian Canadian from Mississauga, Ontario. Hi, Paul Shepherd here. Welcome to the podcast. You know, some people think that having faith means believing a bunch of things that you know are impossible. But here at Rational Christianity, we take a rational approach to understanding the Christian faith. We combine history, science, the Bible, common sense, and then understanding of human nature to make Christianity make sense. Everyone is welcome here. This podcast series is called Rational Christianity because it works to make sense of Christianity. Sometimes that means discussing obscure theological points. But Christianity must also affect how we live our lives. So Christianity must work to solve social justice issues. Christianity is not just about what we feel and think. Christianity must also be about building a better world. In church language, we call this building the kingdom of God. The tragic and intentional and pointless and needless suffering of Palestinians today is a gross violation of human rights, which is why I wanted to share in this episode my recent interview with a Palestinian Canadian. Here is the interview. So today I'm delighted to have in the studio Ihab Mustafa, who I met at a town hall on Palestine in Mississauga, Ontario recently, and invited him to join the podcast. So welcome, Ihab.
Welcome. Thanks for having me, Reverend. I really appreciate being here.
So I have a million questions because Ihab is a Palestinian Canadian, and so he has life experiences I don't have, and I don't know where to start, but I'd like to know, how did your life change after October 7th?
Well, October 7th. I think one of the more interesting things that happened to me after October 7th, like for viewers that can't see me, I look like a pretty white male. I get mistaken for Greek or Italian often. Only a handful of people have ever picked me out as an actual Palestinian. So I haven't experienced an insane amount of racism before October 7th. But the one thing that happened to me that I felt for the first time was a genuine fear of being the other, of the ostracism that comes from being an undesirable. And I think that experience was very sobering, but it was terrifying, I guess, to feel like society was now looking at me as a threat, or that, you know, would the time come where I would be removed from my position, or just like general threats. Like, I think it's more the wonder, the unknown. Like, is it going to get to the point where it's so threatening that in the street, for example, someone's going to try to do something to me, or is it at work? So it's just that fear that comes, and it was the first time in my life that I think I felt it.
Wow. I'm really surprised to hear that. I know when I went out to Mississauga for that town hall, and the first few people I run into, I had a little trouble understanding because of accent and stuff. And so Ihab pops up to ask me some questions, and it's like, great, somebody I can clearly understand. This is nice. And I know that sounds a bit racist, but yeah, you look very white. I mean, I think it's interesting. So I'm surprised to hear that you've put up with more a negative reaction. That really stuns me. And living in Toronto, of course, we like to believe that everyone's welcome here, and that's always a bit more nuanced than that, right?
Yeah, and I would say that it wasn't as much as actually facing it. I faced it once I went to like rallies or what have you, and not as in an isolated sense. It was more the general sense that came from reading the news, and seeing what politicians were saying. I think hearing at one point, I believe it was the defense minister of Israel saying that we're human animals. All Palestinians are human animals, essentially. I think it was hearing that language. That's what really triggered me. It wasn't necessarily someone walked up to me and said, go back to your country or whatever, as much as it was the general feeling of now the media and the world is beginning to talk about my people, and which means me, in a hostile way, which is that these people are terrorists, they're threatening, they like to kill, they like to hurt, and they like to harm. And feeling that now everyone around you is looking at you like you are who you were intrinsically was bad, was evil, was undesirable, was hostile. That hostility, just the sensation, was where really what got me to the point of feeling that.
Wow, yeah, I'm so sorry to hear that. That sounds terrible, because there's no need for that. So from reading the news, there's a general perception I seem to get from the papers anyway that because you're Palestinian, you must hate Jews or something. Can you talk about yourself personally, but also like the Palestinians you know, and you know Palestinians they're still in Palestine, right, in Gaza. How do people actually feel about each other over there from your perspective?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm by no means an academic or professional can generalize, but I can speak to my own personal anecdotes and also what I've seen from my people in the sense of the community I grew up in and the Palestinians I hear, and obviously our TV shows and movies. So I'll just speak like generally in that sense. But starting from myself, like I was never raised with a hate for Jews. What we were raised with was a love for our land, a love for who we are as an identity. And I think like anybody, feeling like who you are intrinsically is being threatened is basically something that anyone rejects and anyone refuses. Nobody wants to be, kind of discriminated against or slaughtered or murdered or imprisoned or whatever it is just because of who you are. And really for us, it was, I was grown up with, this is your country. This is where you're from. You should love where you're from. And the only way that I would say, I would preface this by saying that historically, Palestine has been, you know, has had Jews in it and has had Christians in it. Like, it's not a Muslim country by any means. And there are also Druze. There are people that are Africans there. Like, so black people in Palestine as well. Like, specifically ones that live around like Jerusalem, black Palestinians. So there are you know, a kaleidoscope of type of people that exist within Palestine. It's not homogenous by any means. So historically, Jews would be neighbors to Palestinians, and even in some of the tougher times throughout through the history of Palestine, sometimes Arab Palestinians would hide their neighbors, even if it was from other Arabs or whatever it is, to protect them because of it was normal, it was neighborly to take care of your neighbor, and we just had Jews and Christians as neighbors, so it was very normal. But in my experience, I'll tell you that from what I'm seeing on the ground in terms of the activists I'm working with or whatever I'm doing, like when I go to protests, for example, it's never a hatred for Jews. We don't hate Jews. We're standing with people from Independent Jewish Voices and other groups. Like, they're there side by side as brothers and sisters. Our real impression or feeling is just we don't like colonial oppression. We don't like settler colonials. They could be Martians, they could be Bosnians, they could be Chinese, whoever they may be. The fact is that we are an indigenous population to a land, and a group of people came with violence and attempted to remove us from it. And a lot of us left unwillingly because of that violence, but a lot of us stayed, and now they're being persecuted for who they are. So it has nothing to do with what they look like or what their religion is or their creed or their language, as much as it's just purely that you are oppressing us. And that's what we all feel even to this day. And I think the new generations or what I'm seeing in terms of the younger people or my age or what have you, it's the same feeling. That's it. There's nothing about Jews. There's nothing about Christians. None of our feelings or sentiments are, oh, the Jews are this or the Christians are that. Anyone that stands next to us is a brother and ally. And Palestine has always been a place that welcomed all these people. So it's definitely not about Jews. It's about oppression. It's about colonialism.
So that's great, Ihab. So one thing you can't tell on the audio recording is I'm quite a bit older than Ihab. And, well, I'm not that old. But anyway, we represent different generations. And the story I heard growing up is Israel had to be created just a safe space for Jews after the Second World War, particularly because of the Jewish Holocaust of the Second World War, of course. But we're starting to hear language, and you just used some, so it reminded me, about colonization and a very completely different lens to understand what's actually going on over there. Do you want to unpack that at all some more? Or?
Yeah, I mean, again, not as an academic, I can't really speak to the intrinsic or deep parts of what colonialism is. But in terms of the way that we're all approaching it and the way that we're all seeing it is basically there was a certain point in history where, not a certain point, if we're being honest, at almost every point in history, some population has gone to another population and tried to take over the land or whatever. I mean, this is typical for human history, but it doesn't mean that it's right by any means, nor that I would condone it and say that it's okay. But I mean, in more recent history, Europeans that left Europe went to North America and, colonized North America, and then that same empire has been more or less the empire that's ruled the world, which is the English that became the Americans, and that whole kind of stream way of thinking or belief or what have you has persisted to what now is the same, you know, kind of European colonialists going to Palestine. And we could talk a lot about the difference between Ashkenazi Jews and, you know, Sephardi or Mizrahi Jews and, you know, the cultural makeup or whatever. But without getting too kind of, again, academic, it's just simply that the same school of thought, which is the manifest destiny, which is that, you know, my God and my right, that kind of belief of that I deserve to rule this planet, is the same school of thought that basically has come after Palestine. And for whatever reason, I mean, I don't think there's ever, it's my belief that going into the historical and religious are all red herrings. They all distract from the truth. The reality is it doesn't matter what happened 5,000 years ago. Fundamentally, what did happen is that a group of people came to a place and they decided that they wanted to have it for themselves. And the only way that they could do that is by expelling the population that was there and by increasing the population of their type of people, which... and the way that they framed it, right?
Isn't that sort of the definition of colonization? I mean,
yeah, to make form a colony of a different population and to remove the indigenous population fundamentally, right?
Yeah. So you're a Palestinian, but you're also a Canadian. So I'm curious how you feel about Canada, because the Canadian government, for example, I think they talk a pretty good game about trying to apologize to indigenous people in North America in general. We can argue how well they execute, but they talk a good game about colonization there. They object. It took them a small amount of time before they put sanctions and other things on Russia when they tried to attack Ukraine and are still doing it, of course, which could be seen as colonization. But they, for some reason, the Canadian government supports Israel while it's trying to colonize Palestine, and I find that confusing myself as a Canadian. Do you have a...
It's like different lenses. If you ask me, I was born and raised in this country. So I was born in Mississauga. I've been there for the 33 years that I've been alive. I've traveled a little bit and I've worked in other countries, but fundamentally, I've always been here my whole life. And I can't deny that Canada is a place that has given me privilege. I mean, it's a private club of 40 million people, which is less than 2% of the population of the whole world. If we have talking about 8 billion people, we have the second largest landmass. And we have a really small population density. I mean, this is a very privileged place to be. There are a lot of kind of protections and, you know, I guess the one part that things have changed, this is why I stopped at what I was saying here, is because the idea of free speech, of, kind of the right to believe what you want, to be who you are, I feel like the whole of the West now has been shaken on these terms, like especially human rights. Mm-hmm. So we were raised in like the high schools and taught, I mean, rather, that to believe that the West embodies, you know, human rights and free speech and humanity and all of that type of stuff. But as we've seen more recently, it's only when you are a particular group of people that coincide with the same, you know, kind of elites or the powerful that believe the same things and operate in the same way. It's not a blanket statement. It's by no means that everybody has freedom of speech. You have the freedom to say whatever you like, unless you step out of what is the narrative we want to push. So I think, you know, the news will try to limit what a certain side does say, like the mainstream media, and the other side, it will magnify it. And if you happen to speak up at work or whatever, then you might be removed or ostracized or whatever because of the fact that you don't share the same opinions as the status quo, or more accurately, of the political elite or you know, financial elite, economic elites of the country. So from what I'm seeing is that what I'm feeling is that I have always kind of sensed this growing up. I mean, I didn't feel it as much when I was high school, but when you go through university and afterwards, you sense, yeah, like it's not these ideals and these beliefs are more just sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? They're nice, like window dressing. that are meant to entice us, to make us feel like this is where we're at. But when you look down beyond, and I want to get deep into the root of neoliberalism and capitalism and all of that, how it works. But fundamentally, what you start to see when you peel back the curtain is that the reality is that there are a group of people that are elites that want things to be a certain way. And I don't think it's unique to Canada. I think the whole world experiences this. And what they want is basically what goes. And as a Palestinian, I'm not surprised to see that we don't fit into the kind of the same club in the sense of the global power dynamic. You know, like the Zionists have much closer ties to North America, whether it be politically, whether it be ideologically, whether it be economically. But Arabs and Muslims and Palestinians would be relegated to like a second or third tier. So if your first tier partner is against your second tier partner, it's a very clear partner who you choose. It's nothing more than that, besides the fact that ideologically, economically, politically, whatever, they're all in the same boat. So I'm not surprised to see this. The Ukraine, for example, is a first tier or second tier partner versus Russia, which is a third tier partner or likely an enemy. So you would side with the Ukraine because it makes more geopolitical sense. It's sort of like that real politic kind of idea of a very cynical way of looking at things, but a realistic way of looking at things, which is we don't fit into the right allyship to be given protected status. We are ultimately hostile, and not to mention the fundamental ideology behind Canada coming as a colonial state that has taken over North America. To point a finger at Israel and say, hey, you are genocidal colonialists, opens up, like, I imagine, a huge legal problem and a kind of like ethical problem to say, well, does that mean you're going to give back the land to the First Nations people, and are you going to pack up and go back to Europe or wherever you're from? Like, I think that it opens a whole can of worms, which I can understand. I'm not saying it's right. I can just appreciate why that calculus happens. So on many levels, they have to do what they're doing. And it's only because we have a semblance of a democracy here that the voices of the people are shaking the politicians enough to say, well, if we want to be elected, if we want to have a constituency that is interested in us, then we need to appeal to them or appease to them in some degree. But appeasement, as we've seen from World War II and and throughout history, doesn't necessarily work. It just means sometimes that they'll make some concessions that might be surface level or what have you. And that's where I feel like is happening. Right now we're being given lip service, like you mentioned earlier about, like, you know, with the First Nations people, as they give them lip service, we'll do land acknowledgements, whatever. But when it comes to very material, political, economic, military, kind of support, that's where it falls short. The actions turning into, the words turning into actions, rather.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I could just say your concerns about human rights, that there may be, we call them aspirational goals, but I don't know. I could counter that. I counter my own argument by saying, well, you know, Ukrainians are white, and it's a little calm. But you've said it better than I will, so I'm going to shut up about that. So I want to end with something kind of hopeful. So what are your hopes, maybe near term, or what would peace look like to you? Or I'm giving you a wide open question. What are you hoping?
At the end of the day, yeah, in the near term. Well, near term, I just want to see, like, Gaza stop being bombed and the people stop starving. I mean, we're in the month of Ramadan, and as we fast and we break our fast, I think every one of us feels that bit of guilt of that. For some of us, the fast doesn't stop. So the immediate, obviously, is just to see the cessation of violence and to see the reconstruction of Gaza. Yeah.
Okay, and longer term than that, anyway.
Yeah, so besides that, I mean, I would love to have a homeland where I could go back to, and whether it's for visiting or to stay there and to set up a life. That's ultimately what we all want, I think, as Palestinians and as any people on this planet. They want a place where they can call home. So in terms of, like, geopolitically and you know, militarily and all that, I think it's a very loaded question, in the sense that there are so many different ways to look at it and to appreciate it. But in terms of just desire purely, like we talk about, for example, like the two-state solution or one-state solution, I would say simply on that is that there already exists two states. Just because Palestine doesn't have institutional power or economic power or autonomy doesn't mean that we're not a state. And I think it's a recognition of trying, or it's an effort of the Zionists to say that Palestine doesn't exist as a state, to make it easier to occupy our lands and to take us over. But fundamentally, we are a state. So whether it's a two-state or one state, whatever the political solution is, that's not really my domain to speak on what that should be or where that should go. I would love to see a free Palestine. I would love to see that the Jews that live there live in harmony with the Palestinians, and we remove ourselves from all this intergenerational trauma, whether it be all the experiences the Jews had for thousands of years, whether living in Europe or anywhere else where they experienced that, and the Palestinians that have experienced it for the last 100 years severely, to remove that intergenerational trauma and to find some way that we can live under a single government or whatever it is, to be together and as human beings. So that would be my ideal. I mean, that might be a pie in the sky. Whether or not it's a tangible or attainable or realistic is, again, not, I don't think, the purview of this discussion. But if I'm talking about hopes and dreams, fundamentally, honestly, on the most basic level, I think I'm trying to go a little bit in circles and try to be diplomatic. If I was going to be very frank with you, I just want to see my homeland free. I just want to see Palestine a place where Palestinians, Jews, Christians, Muslim, Palestinians live peacefully. That's fundamentally it.
So really, you just want to go home.
Like, yes, thank you. Thank you for saying it way more succinctly than I spun in circles. But yes, that's exactly what it is.
Well, I was listening to you and I thought, Ehab just wants to be able to go home, which is what every human being wants, yeah, right? Exactly. Like, that's nothing unreasonable.
Exactly. And not temporarily and not under, you know, occupation or watching another Palestinian boy get kicked or grabbed or Palestinian woman get stripped at a checkpoint. Just a home where we go in and we have regular problems as any society. Sometimes we can't stand our neighbor. Sometimes we're a little bit irritated at things or we complain about potholes. I want to see Palestine like that, complaining about potholes. Just simple, regular problems that everybody deserves to have and we all as human beings should have.
And your biggest concern is, what are we going to make for dinner?
Exactly.
And not because you don't have food, but because, you know, you have choice.
Exactly. And yeah. We're, exactly.
Well, I certainly love that vision. I like the image of going home as a very sensible, practical thing.
Yes. And I think the way we really achieve that is ultimately through love. I honestly feel that the sentiment that I'm seeing across all protesters and activists, advocates, is not a hatred for Zionists and not a hatred for, definitely not for Jews, because we don't see them as the target, or not the target as much as the oppressor. So fundamentally, I don't think it's about hatred. It's not about hating them more than they hate us, or harming them more than they've harmed us, or going after them in a way that we can get one over them or arm for an arm or whatever. It's fundamentally just loving each other. The more that Palestinians come closer to each other, to heal each other, whether, again, Palestinian Jews, Christians, and Arabs, the more that we can speak to each other to get through this intergenerational trauma, the more that we can bond with other Arabs and indigenous people and black people and Filipinos and everyone else, the more that we can get closer to that, and the more that everyone sees each other as humans, that's how we're going to achieve victory. I don't think it's going to be by being more ruthless and more violent and more vicious. I don't think that's ever achieved anything. Again, that doesn't mean that I don't think that, I'm not trying to talk in the political sense of whether or not military efforts are needed or not. I'm talking purely about whatever it's going to take to get to where we need to go is going to require cohesion. It's going to require participation from everybody, and it's going to require ultimately all of us finding a way in which we can bind together and go under one roof and try to make something happen. That's how I see it.
Yeah, so that's ties in, I guess, my ideas, which are more theoretical, I suppose, but is that all people deserve to live in security. That's a given, that they deserve it, I mean. And that security comes from peace, actually, not from, you know, being able to kill your enemy. And that peace has to actually come from justice, not from militarization. Again, you may need the military for specific things, but the objective has to be justice. And the justice actually comes from respecting human rights, but kind of alluded to human rights meaning rights for all people, actually, not like every people.
Yeah, not some just, people.
Okay, I'll say it, not just white people. I can say it, I'm white, right? So, all right. Well, thank you so much, Ehab. I really appreciate your insights, and you've taught me a lot of things I didn't know, and really appreciate you spending time here today.
Well, Reverend, I really appreciate you giving me the time and space to talk about this. It's an important subject, but your openness and receptivity, honestly, is greatly appreciated, not to mention the tour you gave me of this great church and the things that you taught me about Christianity. I think I learned a lot from you as well today. So I thank you for your time. I appreciate you giving me the space to speak, and I hope to see you again soon.
Great. Thanks, Ehab.
Thanks.
Hi again, and thanks for joining in today. I'm Reverend Dr. Paul Shepherd, a minister with the United Church of Canada, currently serving at Chapel in the Park United Church in Toronto, Ontario. I'm also an environmental scientist with a PhD in physics. I am passionate about making Christianity make sense.
please subscribe to the channel and feel free to visit the church, either in person or online. You might also enjoy my book, Evolving Christianity, which is about taking a scientific, rational approach to Christianity in order to fight racism and other social diseases. I hope you have a great day. We'll see you next time.